Mickey McGillicuddy, flaky burnout, houseboat resident. Chapter 5, Eviction Raid. I spot the police boats through my slot window as they round the sandy spit that hooks into Richardson Bay, 100 meters from Aquarius Harbor, the length of a football field. The sun is rising behind the hills of Tiburon. I dial honest. 3 rings, 4. Pick up, damn it, the pigs are coming. I stay in character, even when no one is around. It's a good habit. I've been up since an hour before daybreak, on the lookout. The boats head toward me. In front is a police cruiser, followed by a second, smaller police boat and a weathered commercial tug with strips of bright yellow reflective tape on its hull. The hum of the boat's motor is barely discernible above the slosh of the waves. I call Fate. She picks up on the first ring.
Fate! They're here! The Bacon Brigade!
Did you call Honest?
He didn't answer. A tug's heading my way, and the chief's in a black and white cruiser directing traffic like right out of central casting. They're a couple of dozen meters away now, the length of a tennis court. Looks like 6, maybe 7 cops total. Because most people don't grasp meters and miles, I always communicate distance with examples. From sports mostly, tennis courts, swimming pools, even when I'm only talking in my head.
I'll sound the alarm,
she says.
Let them tow you, like we planned, but make trouble.
My plan for the day is to go along with the strategy that Honest and Fate and the others worked out, resisting evictions with a variety of nonviolent tactics, at first. But my case officer, Davis, has encouraged me to discredit the houseboat collective by inciting violence, when the circumstances warrant it and the opportunity arises. Like today. Throwing a Molotov cocktail into the mix will change the vibes in a flash. Abracadabra, no more nonviolence. I don't want to injure or kill anyone, so I'm on the lookout for an empty vehicle or something like that. Knowing my houseboat will be towed, I've already collected my shit in my backpack, and I've stashed the fixings for a molly in a bucket by the tool shed. In just 6 months, I've insinuated myself deeply enough into the Aquarius houseboat community that no one suspects, and I'm not going to do anything today that might blow my cover.
Good morning, Mickey.
It's Police Chief Tin Holland, speaking through a megaphone. I'm startled by how loud her voice is. I guess she sees me through my tiny window.
We are hereby serving the eviction order on Mickey McGillicuddy of Aquarius Harbor. If you do not vacate, we will tow your boat with you aboard, and you will be arrested.
Mickey McGillicuddy. How did I dream up such a perfect name for myself? It was like one of my acting buddies in the Navy said, sometimes your character's name gives you everything you need. The tug bumps my barge, knocks me off my chair. Barney, Tin's deputy, leans over the gunwale and slips a rope through the cleat on the bow of my barge. I open my front door and step out.
Where are you towing me?
Another officer on the tug slips into the shallows in his black boots and cuts my anchor chain with a bolt cutter. Its handle's as long as his arms. Neither answers my question. Fate is already on the water in her pint-sized dinghy, poking a long oar like a lance into the tires that are tied to the outside of the tug, like fenders on a car. She's trying, with little success, to push the much larger tug off course as it begins to tow my boat from its berth. Jude and Noah, the young artist couple with the girl twins, attack the tug from the other side in their orange inflatable. Noah stands on the bench seat with his legs far apart and his hands wrapped around the shaft of a black oar. He waves the oar theatrically, then jabs it at the tire fender. The police are not paying attention to me, so I drop to my knees, shimmy on my belly to the bow, and cut the tow rope off the cleat with my pocket knife. Tin, facing Fate, speaks into her megaphone.
We're enforcing the law, Fate. It's nothing personal.
We're protecting our homes, Chief Tin,
says Fate.
It's nothing personal.
I snake my way back to my shack and lean against the door jamb. Looks like no one saw me cut the rope. A white TV van pulls into the parking lot. It's Johnny Dash, the TV news guy who's been covering the houseboat wars since the first eviction warrants were served a month ago. He wears wader boots, a white shirt, and a paisley tie that flaps over his shoulder as he races onto the dock, hopping over rotten planks. He tucks his microphone under his arm like a football. The black cord of the mic is connected to a bulky camera that Johnny's young colleague balances on his shoulder. He wears oversized sunglasses and a Giants baseball cap, and his light brown beard is bushy, so his reddish nose is all I see of him. As Johnny runs, the cord pulls the cameraman along on the rickety dock, but he holds onto the camera and keeps his footing as he films the action on the water.
This is Johnny Dash, news on the run, reporting live from Aquarius Harbor in Sausalito.
June and Noah retreat, then steer their raft directly into the path of the tugboat. Johnny Dash wades into the shallow water, and the cameraman sets the camera on the railing of the dock. The tug starts pulling away until Barney realizes the rope is no longer attached to my houseboat. I give the camera my best shit-eating grin. Two more dinghies line up next to Fate, their oars in attack mode. Johnny Dash continues.
The police, attempting to serve eviction warrants, have been met by an armada of houseboaters in dinghies, pushing away the police boat with oars.
It's no armada, but now another houseboater, a reclusive and wild-eyed mechanic named Dewey, speeds toward the tug in his motorized dinghy at full throttle from the south, trying to block its way. Tin, standing in the stern of her boat, speaks into the radio on her shoulder.
Protesters are resisting. Send reinforcements.
She raises the megaphone to her mouth.
Drop the oars. Let's keep this peaceful.
Barney, in the tug, points his gun at Fate.
Drop the oar or we'll shoot.
Stand down, deputy,
says Tin.
Put your gun away and don't rock the boat.
Then, to Fate,
drop the oars or we'll arrest you.
Looks like I'm not the only one threatening to change the peaceful vibe. I'm surprised Tin hired a badass like Barney, but maybe he was on the force already and she inherited him. The tug backs up toward my boat again. This time, Barney wraps a heavy chain around the cleat and signals for the tug to pull away. He stares at me. I wave at him. I slip off the edge of my barge into the bay before the tug speeds up. The tide is high, and the water comes up to my crotch. It's cold. My boots sink into the mud. I hold my pack over my head and plod my way to shore. Behind me, I hear Johnny Dash.
The first eviction is underway. The police tugboat is towing away a small house on a large barge, which will be impounded at a dry dock in Richmond, according to Police Chief Tin Holland.
That's my house he's talking about. I spot Honest shuffling along the dock in his cork sandals and boxer shorts, rubbing sleep from his eyes, followed by Dawn, who looks like she's thrown on her dress backwards. From her dinghy, Fate shouts at Honest.
It's about time! Come on!
He climbs into a rusted boat, but Dawn declines to join him. Interesting that she won't join him to fend off the police, but she spent the night with him on his boat, which she never used to do. Honest told me all about the composting toilet he built for her. Maybe that changed her tune. Honest yells, "Cowabunga!" and rows furiously toward the tugboat. There's no way he'll catch it, so he turns toward Tin's boat and pokes at it with his oar. The cop in the cruiser with Tin jumps onto Honest's dinghy, landing on the bench and flipping Honest into the bay. I sat in on the houseboat collectors' planning meeting, so I knew what was coming, but the aggressive resistance to the eviction raid still surprises me. Technically, it's nonviolent. The dinghies and inflatables that are attacking the tugboat are small and underpowered, and the oars the protesters are poking at the police boat and tug are wooden or plastic. But it's quite the spectacle for Johnny Dash and his cameraman to capture for the evening news. What makes this undercover assignment so different than my last one is the lack of real danger. This standoff today feels more like theater than actual conflict. Oh, it is theater. Not that there aren't high stakes, like losing our homes. But when I infiltrated the drug gang in Vallejo, I was on edge every day. It was the most harrowing 6 months of my life. In the end, when a gang leader demanded that I kill a rival to prove my loyalty, Davis pulled me out. I got assigned to Aquarius Harbor because I'd already grown my hair long and I knew boats from being in the Navy. Mostly, I'm hanging out and getting high and playing music, as if I have no cares in the world. Now and then I miss the urgency and excitement of my last gig, but there's a lot to like about this laid-back scene. It's weird the contemptuous looks I get from the cops, like I'm the enemy, a dirty hippie. They don't know I'm on their team. I've come to like my long hair, way more than the buzz cut I had when I was a beat cop in L.A. I can hide behind the hair. Davis is especially hot for me to identify communist sympathizers among the houseboaters. When I brought him photographs of the Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital on Honest's bookshelves, he moaned like he was having an orgasm. I tried to explain that for Honest, communism was a costume, like his pirate garb, but Davis hears what he wants to hear. Honest claims he's a serious subversive in the vein of Abbie Hoffman, and that he has deliberately chosen the role of jester to speak truth to power. He says he studied Dario Fo, the San Francisco mime troupe, and the Commedia dell'arte tradition from Italy. He also says he studied the role of media coverage and how that changes people's perceptions. For example, he says that because news reports portrayed Malcolm X as a scary black revolutionary, that made the politics of Martin Luther King seem more reasonable. I'm not saying I agree or disagree, but I put all this in my report. Davis says gathering information is important, but it's my secondary goal, that discrediting the houseboaters comes first. You don't know how dangerous nonviolence can be, Davis said. Strike at the first opportunity. Once I'm on terra firma, I wind my way to the tool shed by the mailboxes. I hide between the shed and a bottle brush tree and change into a dry pair of pants from my pack. It's hard to make myself invisible because there are people and TV cameras everywhere and gawkers crowd the sidewalk by the parking lot. It's a circus out here, barely controlled chaos. I'm surprised no one has set up a lemonade stand. I'd buy a glass if I didn't have more pressing plans. Inside the shed, I root through my bucket for the empty Coke bottle. Fill it halfway with kerosene from a white can and stuff a rag through the opening. I push it into the bottle with a twig from the tree, then pour in more kerosene so the rag is saturated. The sirens get closer and louder. Reinforcements are coming. Now is the time to strike. I knew this morning that this could be the end of my stay here, but now that prospect is real, I'm wavering. But I have to do the job, no matter what I feel. It's not my place to pick and choose which orders to follow. I don't decide the mission, I execute it. The fact that I'm second-guessing is all the more reason to strike while I can and get out. When I start caring about the people I'm infiltrating, that's when it starts getting dangerous for me. Two police cars and another paddy wagon careen into the parking lot, and the officers start making another round of arrests. Another punctures Jude and Noah's inflatable with a knife. Honest is now in the shallow water, trying to avoid the police, half swimming, half walking, half skulking. Now is my chance while the police are busy. There's an empty black and white police sedan, the width of a basketball court, from me. Empty is what I want. I light the wick of the Molly and rear back to throw.